Hello, listeners, and welcome to Northland Views. This is your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Mary McGroarty Nishli. Ya ate? Today I'll be reading articles from the Navajo Times and the Navajo Hopi Observer. Some headlines have to do with a fire at Diné College, voices of Indigenous women leaders, volunteers building sheds for Navajo elders, perspectives of a Hopi artist, filmer Kewanyama, and comments from Navajo, Hopi, and other Indigenous leaders who are defending Grand Staircase, Escalante Intertribal Coalition, and national monuments that the coalition looks after. Let's begin with this story from the Navajo Times of Tuesday, April 15th. Headline, Fire Destroys Diné College Student Union. Graduation regalia lost weeks before commencement. This is by Nicholas House and first appeared online on April 14th. Dateline, Grants, New Mexico. A fast-moving fire early Monday morning damaged Diné College's student union building, forcing a shutdown of the Tsele main campus. This disruption of services and displacement of students occurred just weeks before the spring convocation. The fire was first detected around 2:15 a.m., prompting security to alert the Navajo Nation Police Department and the Navajo Nation Fire and Rescue Service. While crews responded swiftly, the remote location and lack of a local fire station complicated containment efforts. I believe what basically started is basically the events that have been revealed up to this point, said Arizona Senator Teresa Hatathly, Democrat of District 6, who also chairs the Diné College Board of Regents. Security noticed that a fire had broken out at the Student Union building. The fire was quick and still moving. As flames spread through the heart of the campus, emergency protocols were activated. By 3 a.m., Diné College executive leadership and essential personnel had mobilized on-site, coordinating evacuation services and utility shutdowns in response to growing safety concerns. Due to the heavy smoke, due to the involvement of the first responders as well as Navajo Technical University, some of the students were notified to evacuate, Hatathly said. There was a move to shut the electricity down at the campus. They wanted to make sure there was no impact to that aspect of the college. By mid-afternoon, Diné College officials announced that the fire had not yet been fully contained and urged the public to stay away from the main campus. Only emergency responders and designated staff are currently permitted in the area. Residential housing was directly affected by the shutdown of propane service, cutting off access to heating for both student dormitories and family housing. Generators have been deployed to Spruce Hall to support temporary heating and lighting. Cold meals are being distributed, and despite its proximity to the blaze, the cafeteria remains functional. One of the things that leadership did is they had the cafeteria prepare food, Hatathly said. Even though the student union is within close proximity, staff prepared foods that they set up in one of the dormitories so that students and the employees there can go get food. The incident command has been established at the Ned Hatathly Center, where representatives from Navajo Nation Risk Management, law enforcement, criminal investigators, and college officials are assessing the damage and coordinating next steps. Hatathly said responders, staff, and volunteers have worked continuously since the early morning hours. All education has been shut down, she said. Later on today, they'll make a call if any other avenues can be utilized starting tomorrow. The Student Union building, a long-standing campus landmark, is believed to be a total loss. Constructed in the late 1980s, the building was more than a student hub. It housed essential services, gathering spaces, athletic offices, and a culturally iconic mural, described by Hatathly as a cultural space-age painting. It brought students and the community together, she said. That's the building that is a total loss, is what they communicated to us. The impact is great in that respect. Among the losses were graduation regalia recently delivered and stored in the building. The graduation gowns were ordered, and that's where they usually put the gown, Satathli said. Now that's all gone. We have to figure out how we're going to be able to replace that and be able to provide it to students. Classes are being transitioned to remote learning platforms, and officials say restoration efforts will begin only after the fire department declares the area safe and insurance assessments are completed. In the meantime, the Tsaley post office was also closed because of fire-related hazards. The college has received an outpouring of support from across the Navajo Nation, with local offices donating water and offering assistance. We've had such a huge number of individuals who are sending us positive comments. The college is in their prayers, Satathli said. She extended personal thanks to Diné College administrators, faculty, and emergency personnel. I do want to thank the Diné College leadership for their dedication and commitment, trying to navigate this whole incident, she said. All the way around, I just wanted to send appreciation for those who are offering support and also prayers and offering prayers and also just being optimistic and positive. Officials emphasized that all students, staff, and community members should remain off campus until further notice and that safety, health, and recovery remain the highest priorities. We wish them the ability to move forward as reasonably quickly as possible. Now, some articles from the Navajo Hopi Observer of Wednesday, April 9th. Let's begin with this top story on page 1, Matriarchal Voices, Indigenous Women Leaders at CCC. This is by Alexandra Wittenberg for the Navajo Hopi Observer. In honor of Women's History Month, Coconino College Community College hosted Matriarch Voices on March 31st, a panel featuring Indigenous women leaders from across Arizona who've made an impact in their communities. One of the panelists, Alex Many Goats, delivered a traditional meal of Navajo tacos to guests at the event. Many Goats is the sous chef at Flagstaff Ranch Golf Course and talked about forging a path for herself in an industry often led by men. Other panelists were Navajo Nation Council Speaker Crystalyn Curley, former Navajo Nation First Lady Fafilia Nez, Northern Arizona University Office of Economic Mobility and Social Impact Director Princess Benali, and co-chair of the Indigenous Commission for the City of Flagstaff, Mariah Zavala. The women spoke about their backgrounds, how their cultural heritage has shaped them, challenges of being an Indigenous leader, and what they hope to see for Indigenous women in the future. Nez, who is the majority owner of Nez Consulting Limited Liability Corporation in Flagstaff with her husband, was raised on the Hopi partition land in Big Mountain, Arizona. She spoke about growing up very traditionally in a hogan with rancher parents, attending Navajo ceremonies and partaking in Navajo prayers and philosophies. She had no electricity, so turned to books, becoming interested in many different fields of learning. We were introduced to a world that was just very structured. What that taught me was that the world was a very beautiful and positive place, and just as an individual being, how much love and support and positive energy there was, Nez said. Dad challenged us with walking in two worlds. It's very different what we grew up with and the mainstream Western world. The values, the traditions, the stories, all those things really did instill in me at a very young age critical thinking and being a lifelong learner. Nez went on to receive her undergraduate degrees in political science and criminal justice, a Master of Public Administration, and an honorary doctorate degree in humane letters from Northern Arizona University. As First Lady, she focused on education, outdoor recreation, nonprofits, volunteerism, philanthropy, faith-based initiatives, financial literacy, animal welfare, and the retention of the Navajo language and culture. Curley said she never envisioned being an elected official growing up. Originally, she studied criminal justice and wanted to be a police officer or forensic psychologist. She said she's a firm believer that the Creator puts you in a certain place for a certain reason in time. Being under 40 and being the first woman speaker of our nation is a constant daily struggle of going against the norms of being in government and going through assimilation, colonization, the Western thought that men are above women, she said. Curley said she's constantly being undermined and underestimated in her role. She believes that many of the issues on the Navajo Nation are social ills impacting the parenting, family, and education, all issues that impact the home, along with the Navajo language and culture constantly being threatened. However, Curley said women are more equipped to deal with these issues due to being strong problem solvers at home. In the past, a lot of our ancestors fought these monsters, social ails, and now in this day and age, it seems like those types of monsters are reemerging, she said. Overall, we need our men and our fathers to be supportive of our women and be able to work together. Zavala has roots in the Oaxacan, Puerto Rican, and indigenous communities as a member of the Pascua Yaqui tribe. She was born in Fresno, California, where women in her lineage had a hard upbringing, being pushed into sex work. Her grandmother was murdered when her mother was 12. I'm very resilient and I'm very passionate to create safe spaces for other people. Indigenous teachings inspire me to carry that pain with me almost like an armor, to create those safe spaces for people around me that have those same backgrounds, Zavala said. She leads summer rafting enrichment experiences for underprivileged youth. Princess Benali, who is the widow of the late Navajo artist Clay Benali, said she and her siblings were the first generation in their family to go to college. I want to know how we can best set up Native students for success, for persistence, for goal and great attainment in higher education, Benali said. Currently, Benali is attaining her doctorate in education at Arizona State University. She said education was a value instilled in her and her siblings by her parents, and they have been a great support system as well as her co-workers and Clay. However, Benali said education doesn't necessarily have to be through higher learning. If there are young indigenous individuals that learn from their elders or have other cultural paths. Nez thinks of a leader as someone who's been promoted by people in their community. Curley, who was raised by her medicine man grandfathers while her mother worked multiple jobs, shared her eldest grandfather's parable about qualities of a leader. When the animals were looking for a leader among themselves, they first looked to the bear. He is strong and masculine, but come to find out, all he did was eat and sleep. Then they looked to the mountain lion. He was strong and fast. However, he was sleeping too much and constantly grooming himself. Lots of leaders are very self-interested and greedy, Curley shared. The snake had two tongues and was constantly telling two different stories, and the coyote was a trickster, making chaos for everybody. There's not a definite answer of what makes an exemplary leader in Navajo culture, but teachings of what not to do as a leader abound, Curley said. It really starts with you. Don't just dream about it. Do it. Now, some news also from page one about a coalition. This is from the regional news column. Headline, Navajo Hopi Join Grand Staircase Escalante Intertribal Coalition. Dateline, Escalante, Utah. Representatives of six tribes, including the Hopi tribe, the Navajo Nation, the Kaibab Band of Paiute Indians, the Paiute Indian tribe of Utah, the Ute Mountain tribe, and the Zuni tribe, announced the formation of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument Intertribal Coalition on March 21st. Our ancestors have walked the Aboriginal path to extinction, but we will continue on that Aboriginal path with their spiritual blessing, said Hank Stevens of the Navajo Nation, who serves as the tribal representative on the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument Advisory Committee. The coalition will focus on advocating for the conservation of their Aboriginal lands and for the continued protection and preservation of the cultural and environmental resources found within the monument. The coalition is also committed to defending Grand Staircase Escalante from any attempts to modify the monument boundaries or reduced protections for the monument. In particular, the coalition will advocate for tribal voices and perspectives to be heard and included in the management of the monument, which protects cultural resources of great significance to tribes. The input of tribal nations, federal agencies, and local communities balancing cultural protection and conservation through tribal knowledge, lifeways, and conservation expertise ensures that Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument remains protected, accessible, and well-managed for future generations, said Craig Andrews, vice chairman of the Hopi tribe. Hopi believe that understanding the past is important for the future. It is essential to preserve our Aboriginal lands as today Lita Kukveni footprints are recognized as ancestral clan migrations and something we can learn from for posterity. Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument was designated in 1996 under the Antiquities Act to protect 1.7 million acres in southern Utah, including slot canyons and stone arches, dinosaur fossils, and cultural and archaeological sites of profound importance to Native American tribes, including sacred petroglyph panels and ethnobotanical resources that Native peoples continue to use today. Native peoples have interacted with the Grand Staircase Escalante National landscape traditionally and ceremonially, as well as domestically, since time immemorial. The Intertribal Coalition's advocacy will include working to address threats to the monument, such as looting, vandalism, and graffiti, and protecting the monument for all Americans to appreciate and enjoy. Tribes carry an invaluable treasure of traditional knowledge about these lands, meticulously passed down through generations, said Head Councilman Anthony Sanchez, Jr. of the Zuni tribe. This profound understanding reveals deeper meaning that extends far beyond what is visible. Indigenous perspectives illuminate the intricate interconnectedness of ecosystems, fostering harmony and sustainability. The rich tapestry of oral histories, cultural narratives, and ceremonial traditions provides essential context, often uncovering insights that written records overlook. By wholeheartedly embracing this connection, we can enhance preservation efforts, honor cultural integrity, and forge impactful collaborations. Let us recognize and elevate these cultural traditions together, ensuring that they are cherished and integrated into a sustainable future for all. Autumn Gillard, Cultural Resources Manager with the Paiute Indian Tribe of Utah, emphasized that the tribes are the living descendants of the ancestors that left their footprints and writings across Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments. In Southern Paiute teachings, we are taught from infancy that we are the stewards of these lands which must be protected and preserved for future generations, she said. The announcement of the coalition's formation comes just weeks after U.S. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum issued a secretarial order calling for a review of national monuments and prioritizing oil and gas drilling and energy development. Grand Staircase Escalante is among the national monuments targeted by that order. Clearly to be continued. Now, also from page one, headline, Hopi artist Kewanyama tackles veterans' issues and culture. This is by Stan Bindel for the Navajo Hopi Observer. Filmer Kewanyama doesn't like crowds, so you won't find him on the Native American art show circuit. But he is passionate about his art, especially when it comes to veterans, Hopi culture, and nature. His work is often displayed at museums or galleries and by appointment at his studio in the 6th Street Business Park in Prescott. The 6th Street Business Park in Prescott is a unique mix of about 18 artists and other businesses. Kewanyama is passionate about bringing attention to veterans' issues and Hopi culture. After graduating from Sherman Indian High School in Riverside, California, He served in the Army for 21 years and went on to Yavapai Community College, where he studied graphic design and fine arts. This led Kiwanyama in 2005 to paint with acrylics and use computers for design. In 2007, he started to enter competitions, with most of his paintings centering on Hopi life, but he also carved kachina dolls and lightning sticks as well as sculptures. "I would go back to Hopi to share thoughts about Hopi life," he said. Kiwanyama has won the National Veterans Art Competition 5 times. His last winning painting has the Hopi code talkers in the middle, and below there are Hopi ceremonial dancers. When he went to New York to accept the award, he made a point of telling the audience that 24 tribes had code talkers. Comanches were the first tribe with code talkers, and the Hopi tribe had 9 code talkers. "I wanted to bring awareness to that," he said. One of the artists that Kiwanyama admires is the late Michael Kaboti, because he gave explanations of his work. Kaboti was part of the artists' Hopi, comprised of 7 elite Hopi artists. "I asked Michael if I could join Artists Hopi. Artists Hopi was about having humility and taking things in a good way. It was about being human and laughing at yourself. I was the clown at the kachina dances 3 times. Michael told me, when you're the clown and you laugh at yourself, you are one of us," he recalled. Kiwanyama also loved watching his father, Leroy, paint, because his dad used an old style of mixing different methods together and giving explanations of the meaning of his work. While Kiwanyama is not a fan of crowds, he will exhibit his artwork at veterans' events. Kiwanyama created a drawing of Hopi Olympian Louis Tewanima and has a painting that traces the ancestral footprints of Chaco Canyon called Cherish the Sacred, about the Verde River, too, which was displayed at the Natural History Institute in Prescott when they had an exhibit about the Verde River. His artwork, which can be found on his website, all comes with explanations. As for the Verde River painting, Kiwanyama said water sacred to the Hopi because they are farmers. His paintings also express a love of nature and wildlife. In his studio, one painting that stands out is the turtle kachina, with the kachina centered and turtles below him. He also has a painting of a frog kachina. Kiwanyama takes pride that his paintings are different, because they show more details about the faces, hands, bodies, and movements of those portrayed. He emphasizes that he gives explanations with his paintings, which he feels is important for people to understand. His paintings are expensive, but he has prints for those on a budget. Kiwanyama said the best part of his work is exploring what it means to be a Hopi artist in today's world. He said the most challenging part is not overlooking any one piece, because he doesn't know when to stop. "It takes patience, but I want people to know us and come visit us," he continued. "I work on the seasonal NAU Rhodes Scholar Program, where we take people to Navajo, Hopi, Walnut Canyon, Wapatki, Grand Canyon, and other places. They get to see the native arts and crafts, and that helps our economy." His paintings are currently displayed at the Cactus Wren Gallery in Tubac in southern Arizona. His artwork has been displayed at Phippen Museum, Heard Museum, and the Museum of Indigenous Peoples. He said a lot of people who move to Prescott want his art in their homes because they're interested in Western Native art. Kiwanyama hails from Shungapavi on Second Mesa on the Hopi Reservation. His matrilineal clan is the Sun Forehead Clan. "Hopi kids are all artistic because that is what they are taught," he said, adding that boys are taught to make bows and arrows and lightning sticks. "You learn by watching your elders. The elders will give you a cottonwood root and say, start with this." His father, Leroy, was a 2- and 3-dimensional artist commissioned to create work in Phoenix, Flagstaff, and New York, among other places. To make an appointment with Kiwanyama, you can telephone him at 928-273-0076 or email yoimasa@gmail.com. A brief item from page 2, the community pages of Navajo Hopi Observer. Navajo Nakhbayati urges U.S. government to uphold trust obligations in tribal education. This is by Native News Online. The Nakhbayati Committee of the Navajo Nation Council unanimously passed legislation number 0028-25 on March 28th, calling on the U.S. government to uphold its trust and treaty obligations by consulting with the Navajo Nation before implementing policies or executive actions that could impact tribal education. This legislation was introduced in direct response to a February 14th memorandum from the U.S. Department of Education Office for Civil Rights. The memo, signed by Acting Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights Craig Traynor, warned that federally funded educational institutions could risk losing federal funding if they engage in race-based practices, including affirmative action and diversity, equity, and inclusion DEI initiatives. Acting Assistant Secretary Traynor's memo creates uncertainty for programs that are vital to our students, Delegate George Tolth said. This legislation is about protecting our treaty rights and ensuring that Navajo students are not left behind due to a misunderstanding of our political identity. The committee expressed concerns that the Education Department's memo fails to acknowledge the political status of federally recognized tribes, treating them instead as racial groups. The legislation reaffirms the educational programs serving Navajo and other American Indian and Alaska Native students should not be categorized under racial classifications outlined in the department's guidance. Such a misclassification, the committee argues, undermines tribal sovereignty and disregards the unique legal relationship between tribal nations and the U.S. government. We wish them much luck establishing that important understanding. The committee unanimously approved the directive instructing the Office of the President and Vice President, Office of the Speaker, and the Navajo Nation Washington Office to coordinate a meeting related to this no later than April 10th. So sorry, listeners, we're already out of time. Thank you so much for listening to Northland Views, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Mary Magrarty Nishli. Thank you for listening, and until next time, Hagone.